Welcome to First Things First. It is Thursday. We are crawling our way through the week. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. What?
What defines crawling your way through the week?
It just feels like it's been a long week because next week is the holiday. We're a week.
I feel like
the
week is flying by. Yeah.
No, it wasn't a negative thing.
Oh, no, I'm running.
I love every day. I want every day to last long.
Fix it.
Woo! Okay.
I'm wiped out.
In Jenna's defense, it's rare for her to make it to Thursday without having a sick day off, so I understand why this
one that was not in my
has
defense.
Taken
that
long. Was, it's felt longer for her than usual.
That is just not right. We got a big show today. The Warriors lost again last night. Three-time heavyweight champ Lennox Lewis will sit right there. He'll join us in studio in less than an hour, but we start with a little NFL football. 2 weeks left in the NFL's regular season, and for some, a chance to make a final playoff push. The Dallas Cowboys have already made the push, now looking to clinch a win over Tampa Bay, and they win the NFC East. Cowboys host the Bucs on Sunday. This Cowboys team, 6-1 at home this season, while just 2-5 on the road. Ezekiel Elliott spoke about the team's approach to Sunday's game.
Approaching this game like we've approached, you know, the past six, you know, back against the wall, this is a must-win for us. You know, we got to do whatever we can to go out there and secure that NFC East division title. And, we just got to, know that nothing's going to be given to us. We got to go out there and take everything. So, you know, we just got to have that mindset going into this Sunday so we can come out of there winning.
All right, CC, we saw one Cowboys team last week and then one the 5 weeks prior. Which team do you expect to see Sunday against Tampa Bay?
I expect them to get back on track. I expect them to get off to a fast start. This is a Tampa Bay team that you can't take for granted. I think that the Saints will give the Cowboys a healthy example of the type of talent that Tampa Bay and the type of players that they have, the big plays that they can make. So the Cowboys, I believe that they'll approach this game the right way. We can't expect a young football team. We bragged about their defense. We bragged about their ages. We always talk about Dak and Zeke and how young they are now. Amari Cooper, another guy under 25. So, man, their core group of guys is a very, very young group. We can't expect them to not have one hiccup in a six-week stretch. I mean, they were playing some tremendous football. This team has come a long way. This is not a team you would like to be able to face in the playoffs because of their ability to be able to run the ball the way they are. And I believe that their defense will show up when it's time for them to show up in the playoffs. So what they have to do, create some turnovers. This defense get after Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay one of the worst in the league as far as turnover differential. At the bottom right there, 31st in the league. So with 32 giveaways that they've had this year, Dallas should be looking for those opportunities to create extra possessions for Zeke and Dak and to make the field shorter. So in a game like this, jump right on top of them from the beginning. Guys begin to question. You mentioned the holidays. You think these athletes ain't thinking about the holidays? These are some of the most hectic weeks. So watch the lines as far as Vegas, and then you're going to watch on Sunday and wonder, man, certain teams are going to play like a half of football, and if the game is not competitive, they're going to start worrying about their knees, worrying, I don't want to get a surgery this offseason. So I believe the Dallas Cowboys, that's what they should do to Tampa Bay, create some turnovers early, on a short field. I believe that leads them to a big win at home.
This game will determine to me whether or not last week was a hiccup or not. I think it was. I'm going into the week, I said this letdown game for Dallas, Indy needs it, all of that. So I agree with nearly everything Chris said. Unless Dallas has a bad performance this week, in which case you will start to say, hold on a second. Was the aberration more the winning streak rather than the letdown against Indy? Because if I'm going to take Dallas as seriously as Jerry Jones wants them taken as a playoff contender, then they dominate the Tampa Bay Bucks. Then this is a game at home to clinch the division that they run it down their throats and they make big plays in the passing game. This Tampa defense is turning the average opposing running back into Adrian Peterson, prime Adrian Peterson. They've already allowed 1,800 rushing yards this year at nearly 5 yards per carry, and they're allowing the opposing quarterback into prime Drew Brees, allowing 72% completions and a 111 passer rating. So that's over the course of the season. So if Dallas is a legitimate playoff threat, which I think when they play their best they can be, this is a game that Tampa Bay is thinking about the offseason at halftime, because this is a game Dallas is up 14-3 at halftime. There are different ways to win, different ways to lose. We'd feel differently, a little bit differently about Dallas this week if they had lost 23-20 Indy. And so there's different ways to win, even in a division clinching scenario.
I wouldn't feel any different, because I know you can have a mental lapse. I realize how good these NFL teams, and I don't think that there's not a team out there right now. The Saints are sputtering offensively. They play Pittsburgh. We're not drawing pitchers as far as the Saints are concerned. Now, the Saints, do they have to blow out Pittsburgh? Or why should we have Dallas under some different scale? These NFL games typically are always very, very competitive. What I'm saying is, we can't judge them if this is a close game that they weren't ready. It's a matter of winning and losing. Now, you would like to be able to see some margin, but the way Tampa Bay has played, the best team in the NFC would show you can't take Tampa Bay lightly. They beat New Orleans the first game of the season, and they were in a dogfight a couple weeks ago. So I think that we have to be careful and make sure we judge Dallas just like we judge the other teams trending towards the playoffs.
And I am trying to judge them that way. And if Tampa puts up a bunch of points, I'm not going to necessarily hold that against the Cowboys, even because this is a team that has shown it can score. But if you can't move the ball consistently against this defense, then when you're talking about a playoff game against...
It would show problems as far as that offensive line going forward. Yes, it would show some other symptoms that will be played out in the playoffs.
That's the point I'm making. So maybe I shouldn't point out that they need to win by multiple scores, but they need to have an efficient, high-powered offense.
Yes,
because
this is
by far the worst defense they're going to play the rest of the way. And every defense that's going to make the playoffs in the NFC is a good defense outside of maybe the Rams. Like, I know we have questions about them. Bears are great. The Vikings have the ability to be great. Seattle's been very consistent. We've talked about the Saints all of a sudden the last month of football, how good their defense has been. So I need to see some punch out of the Cowboys' offense in this game.
But keep in mind, there still won't be a healthy offensive line that Dallas is going to take into the game on Sunday. There's still questionable parts to it. So, yes, you do have Tampa Bay's defense, which you get to face, but you're still going to struggle with how to find a way to both run the ball and pass the ball with a shaky offensive line.
I believe the passing attack should really thrive.
Yes.
Tampa Bay, regardless of who's on the line, Tampa Bay is not – no NFL team wants to get run on. That's the most humiliating way. It's more of a macho thing. They would much rather you throw the ball for 500 yards than for you to rush for 200. So Tampa Bay, we'll have 7. We'll have 8 in the box. Like, for me, when I game plan, I'm not going into the game saying we're going to run the ball to force them. I'm going out there knowing they're going to have 7, 8 in the box, and I'm throwing the ball, and I'm throwing it deep on play action early in the game to be able to loosen that defense up. And then I'm going to start coming back where Nick talks about and start getting that 5 yards a carry. But I believe that offense, it starts with the passing game, with Amari Cooper. I'm challenging that defense, and I'm challenging them deep.
One guy to watch, you mentioned the Cowboys' offensive line. On the other side of the offensive line, Jason Pierre-Paul. He obviously made his whole name and career in this division against the Dallas Cowboys. He's now with Tampa. He's got 13.5 sacks this year. He's been very good for them. He knows the tendencies of these Cowboys' offensive linemen, and he's going to be lined up next to one of the best deep players in the league that we don't talk about, Gerald McCoy, the D-tackle. Mm-hmm. This Tampa defense has not been good. Those two guys have been good. It's the 9 players surrounding them who haven't necessarily always held up their end of the bargain. If Tampa is going to make this a dogfight, yes, they're going to score points, but I also would imagine, we talk about Dak being sacked 51 times, second most in football. Talk about Dak, the strip sacks. Jason Pierre-Paul coming around the corner. If Dak's holding onto the ball too long, that could be a game-changing play.
Gerald McCoy, also one of the funnier guys in the NFL. Thank you, Hard Knocks. Let's take a break. Coming up, how can the Seahawks slow down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? Hear from Pete Carroll next on First Things First. Coming up on New Year's Eve, the Red Box Bowl kicks off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Then flip over to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern. Or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. All right, guys, we're going to get to Pat Mahomes and Russell Wilson in a second. But first, a couple of big plays from last night presented by Geico. Kawhi Leonard with a big dunk.
Big win. I understand that the opposition was upset with the refs a lot of last night, but this was a great win by the Raptors. A lot of whining at the refs by both sides during this basketball game. Excellent win by the Raptors.
Great finish by Kawhi. You know, go to the left hand. Very few of our superstars can finish like that with both hands at the rim.
Sixers, Knicks. Ben Simmons takes the pass and absolutely bodies poor Noah Vonleh, then throws it down.
Oh, man, he was sending a message. They had a little altercation before this. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons, a little LeBron James action right here.
Get
that LeBron spin move. Not as quick as LeBron, but work on it.
Take.
He's right in his range right there, Jenna. That little circle, that's it. That's his universe.
There we go.
Suns in Boston. Check this out. Kyrie, between the leg pass to Jason Tatum on the fast break.
Listen, this is vintage Kyrie. That's beautiful and a great finish by Tatum, who knew it was. He knew some pass was coming. Was not caught by surprise at all. Very surprising fourth quarter in this game yesterday.
Surprising that we haven't seen Jason Tatum on the highlights as much as we thought after a spectacular playoff run last year.
Same game. You see the handles there?
Good Lord.
Just unfair. Breaks down two defenders, hits the reverse layup. So good.
I mean, this is where it's plays like this that make you say Kyrie Irving, the greatest handles ever in flat earth history, the greatest handles ever in round earth history. Doesn't matter. With respect to the original Isaiah Thomas, it's got to be Kyrie, man.
No, the only reason why you can say that is because Isaiah Thomas says that. Isaiah Thomas taught me how to dribble, met him at a young age. Oh, my goodness. He had the best handle until this dude was born on flat earth.
Time for today's Subway Choice moment. So the Chiefs face a tough road challenge as they travel to Seattle. Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson, the two have a lot in common. Both rank in the top five in passer rating. Both go off script, give defenses fits, and both were actually drafted to play baseball. It is a good thing that didn't work out. Here's what Seahawks coach Pete Carroll had to say about facing Kansas City.
They have shown everything now. You know, we've seen them. You know, after all these games, we know what kind of the whole scope of this offense is. The first month of the season, everybody was kind of on their heels. And so hopefully we can, you know, settle into it. It's not that it gets easy because they have such a diverse attack that, you know, you got to be ready for a lot of stuff. But, you know, our guys are, you know, they're up for it. They're ready for the challenge and all of that. And we got to do a great job on their really classy receivers. You know, Kelce and Hill are just unbelievably talented guys, having great years. So there's a lot of issues here. So I think our guys will be ready to do this.
All right, CC, we'll start with you. This isn't the defense of a couple years ago, but it's still been pretty good, at least a good scoring defense. How do they slow down Patrick Mahomes in this Kansas City Chiefs offense?
Well, one way is trying to keep them off the field. So the Seattle and Pete Carroll, he thinks they're up to the challenge. That means challenging for Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson in that offense. If they don't win time possession by 3 or 4 minutes, they don't have no chance against this type of offense. If they don't turn them over, they don't win the turnover battle, not by one, but by two. So I'm looking for 34 minutes time possessions, and they got to win the turnover battle by two. So in doing that, and Seattle has been great in both those areas, number one in the NFL throughout the season, they changed their philosophy of how they're going to do things. They are not going to drop Russell Wilson back 45 times a game and tell him, hey, I need you to make 8 or 10 plays on your own. No, they are a physical football team. Their defense matches up with the physicality of that offense. They don't turn the ball over, and Russell can make just enough plays. They're a different team playing at home. So that is always an advantage, but the fast surface and the quickness that I believe Kansas City will enjoy playing on that turf, because the last few weeks they haven't been able to do that. It's been cold in Kansas City. The field's not the same. So if you want a recipe to win in one of these games, how to negate one of these big-time offenses, you have them sitting on the sideline. And then when they get on the field, they're rushing because they know, man, we don't have time of possession, and that forces mistakes, which lead to turnovers. That's the way to Seattle. Is able to get it done at home. If they're great in those two areas, time of possession and win that turnover margin by two, the Seahawks can upset Kansas City.
I'm glad you're talking about winning the turnover margin not by one but by two, because I know that the odds makers in Vegas say the Chiefs are only a 2.5 point favorite in this game. Because of how these teams match up against each other, I think the Chiefs, I If things go evenly, I don't think Seattle has a realistic path to victory. What we know is, as great as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks have been since he's gotten there, they're 4-27 if the opponent scores more than 24 points. Not 34 points, 24 points. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs are the first team in NFL history to score at least 26 every single week of the year through 14 weeks. Like, a great defensive performance against the Chiefs is what the Ravens did, 27. What the Chargers did, 28. And so if you're going to get in the air, and by the way, this year for the Seahawks, it's been a good year when their opponent breaks 24 points. They're 1-5. Like, the way they beat you is low scoring, grinded out games. And this year in particular, time of possession, because they're running the ball for 150 yards, every single week. 10 of the last 11 games, they've gone for 150-plus. The one part where it's still, I think, even despite all that, doesn't play in Seattle's favor is the Chiefs have been a bad time possession team all year. They're bottom six time possession. They're used to playing at 28 minutes.
All of the high-scoring teams, if you look at the top five highest-scoring teams in NFL history, none of them won the time of possession over the season. The reason why? Because all of them had that quick strike ability and time of possession. It's not that important, especially when you have the lead. When you have the lead compared to trying to come from behind, and that's what teams, New England, when they had the great season, that's what they did. The greatest show on turf, that's what they did. The 98 Vikings, that's what they did. So that's not one of the stats that they'll look at and will scare them.
Normally, I would say Seattle is one of the tougher places to play in the NFL. But a close second might be Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Do they have any advantage knowing how tough it is for opponents to come in and play in Kansas City? Now they take that show and they bring it to Seattle?
Yeah, it's a great understanding. Playing in Minnesota, and we played in the Dome, we always felt like when we went on the road, we still had some advantage because we were used to playing with a lot of noise. Now, typically, we weren't on the field, but as football players, it's great training. When you play in that great environment in Kansas City, when you go on the road to a place like Seattle, no, it's not a shock. For the offensive linemen, which typically it's going to affect more than that, it's not a shock to them, that crowd noise. So it's a small little thing, but it's something in football games. It's the difference in, oh, man, illegal procedure, 1st and 15. Right. If Kansas City can keep the number right, 2nd and medium, 3rd and medium, 3rd and short, it becomes very hard for this Seattle defense, which I believe to be a good defense, not a great one. I believe you can take advantage of their cornerbacks on the outside if you keep that number right.
That is the other key to Seattle, is the Chiefs have been a very penalty-prone team. They commit a lot of penalties, and a lot of them are procedural penalties. They are false starts or delay-of-game situations, and that's where that crowd, particularly Sunday Night Football, where national TV, folks in Seattle have been drinking all day long. They are going to be loud, raucous, and they're coming off a terrible loss. Seattle could have essentially locked up a playoff spot last week,
Yes. And
they lose to the Niners in overtime where they won the coin toss. They, after not playing well for 60 minutes, they got the ball first, all you got to do is go down and score. Couldn't do it. So this is a desperate Seattle team. Where the Chiefs are in more of an advantageous spot than any team in football this year outside of maybe the Chargers, however, is this. They are battle-tested, man. They've played two against the Chargers, one against Pittsburgh, game against Baltimore, game against New England, game against the Rams, now a game against Seattle. They have played the majority of teams that are going to make the playoffs. The Chiefs have played them already. So they haven't gotten to 11-3 by beating up on bad teams. They have gone through a first-place schedule in a tough division and a tough cross both of their other divisional matchups. The AFC North has a couple good teams. The NFC West has a couple good teams. So playing a team the quality of Seattle won't shock Kansas City. What could shock Kansas City is if Seattle says, we're just going to run it on first down. We're going to run it on second down. We're going to run it again on third down. Because where the Chiefs defense, the only thing the Chiefs defense does well is get to the quarterback and force turnovers. And where the thing they do worse than anybody is stop the run. And I think Seattle, my game plan if I'm Seattle is Chris Carson, Russell out on an option. Like run.
Tell me what this game means for Seattle. Lay out the stakes for this game.
For Seattle, they win the game. They're going to the playoffs. They lose the game. It's all of a sudden in play. They don't.
In a year that they're rebuilding, it means a lot. Coaches like Pete Carroll, oh, no, I'm not rebuilding. I got Russell, man. We're retooling for them to be able to get in the playoffs because let's not forget, they're in a division with the Rams. So to be able to get in and get that wild card spot, I believe it means a lot for Pete Carroll and his program as they move forward. This is a team because they got some experience. They got some guys. Watch out for Frank Clark in this game. Yeah. All right. If you get after the game, if Seattle wins, well, what happened? They dominate time possession. They get the two turnovers, and Frank Clark has caused havoc in the backfield of Kansas City.
You asked what it meant for Seattle. For Kansas City, it either means they officially or unofficially lock up the one seed. They could, depending on what happens with the Chargers on Saturday, what happens with the Texans, they could officially lock up the one seed with a win on Sunday Night Football. But even if it's not official, they have the Raiders at home in Week 17. But if they lose, for the one seed, now you're talking about the five seed.
Yeah.
Like
the Raiders are going to be dangerous. They signed Peterman. Oh, Peterman.
You're right. Peterman. You're right. They did sign him yesterday.
Yeah, after his fifth trial. Nate Peterman, man. Good to be him.
Right?
One touchdown, seven picks career. How about this? Five trials. Everyone wants to get Peterman
not?
A job.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, what can the Steelers do to escape New Orleans with a win? That's next. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Look who's here. Three-time Super Bowl champ. All-around great guy, tons of insight, tons of takes. It is Mark Stinkschlereth. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Glad we got that out of the way. All right, Stink, let's talk some Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers pulled off a crucial win against the Patriots last week, and as a reward for that, they get to face the 12-2 New Orleans Saints. Important to note, guys, had they lost, they would still be facing the New Orleans Saints. Over the last 6 weeks, no defense has been better than New Orleans. Big Ben spoke on the Steelers' focus heading into Week 16.
Well, you just want to get in the playoffs. It doesn't matter how you get in. You just want to get in. Obviously, the first and second seed, you liked it, but I don't think we can get that now. So let's just find a way to get in.
Ben, how do you attack a defense that seems so well-rounded? You know, they're strong in pretty much every area.
Just try and protect the ball. The guys up front are going to have their hands full with the pass rush and the noise, like I talked about. And then we'll just have to win our matchups.
All right, Stink, besides protecting the ball, how does the Steelers' offense match up with what has been a very good Saints defense over the last couple of weeks?
No, I think the Steelers match up with any defense. I mean, you look at the weapons they have on the outside with Brown, with Smith-Schuster. Washington has played really well
of late.
Yeah, of late. So, I think that's the big thing. The thing to me that is always shocking about the Steelers is the Steelers have a really good offensive line. The Steelers, to me, on film, choose not to run the ball most of the time. They're 30th in the league in running the ball, and you saw kind of the formula. Now, when you run the ball, you don't put up a lot of points usually, right?
Yes.
You control the tempo of the game. You control the line of scrimmage. You do all those things. But, again, against New England, they ran the heck out of the ball. They only scored 17 points. So that's what you get into. You get into a little bit of a fight. Because you have one bad run and coordinators are like, well, we've got so many weapons on the outside. Mm-hmm. And the Steelers choose oftentimes just to abandon it. And I thought the thing they did better than anything else last week in winning against New England was they said, no, we are going to stay true to what we are. We're going to stay true to running this football and creating some big plays outside. But again, you know, CC will tell you, and any offensive coordinator you talk to in this league will tell you, hey, we got to run the ball, we got to control the tempo, but we got to throw it to score.
But don't you think part of that is because for so many weeks this season, they weren't sure what they had at running back. Once they knew for sure L. Bell wasn't coming back, they knew they had James Conner, maybe not so sure. Jalen Samuels, maybe not so sure. So they went to the pass because that's what they do know and they have the personnel.
If we wanted to make an excuse, we could make that for Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But as Stink said, not only this year, but the last several years, even when they have L. Bell, it's a luxury that you can put him outside, but their overall philosophy as an organization is, no, we're not going to punch you in the mouth. We got a great quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and we can develop wide receivers. I mean, if you look at the guys they have drafted and developed, like, they are like, there was a time when the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think, Stink, you can relate to this, with John Elway. John Elway, man, he dropped back, he's going to sling it, they're going to win on John Elway. Man, they got Terrell Davis like, listen, forget that. Our philosophy is we're getting ready to start doing this. And that's what you're saying about Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They don't wake up in the morning and say, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to lean on the running back because they've been so skilled and because of their quarterback. It's just developed. We can make an excuse and say James Conner, but even when they have L. Bell, when they get into big games, their philosophy is they're going to put the, and they might throw it. to L. Bell out of the backfield 8 or 10 times and maybe hand it to him 10 or 12. Never that philosophy. We're just going to take over the game with the physicality.
And to your point, this past week, they actually overtook Minnesota. Minnesota, which was passing at 66% of the times, were one of the reasons they fired their defensive coordinator. They then offensive coordinator, pardon me, John DeFilippo. They then ran the ball 40 times, did Minnesota this past week. This past week, now Pittsburgh has overtaken Minnesota. They passed the ball on the highest percentage of snaps of any team in the league, nearly 67%. Now, I understand everything everyone at the table is saying, but if there was ever a game where an offensive coordinator is going to look at the other team's strengths and weaknesses and say, man, we better be able to sling it around the yard, it would be when you're playing the number one rush defense and the number 28 pass defense. When you are playing a game in New Orleans in perfect conditions where you are going to say, and James Conner's not likely to play, say, okay, all of what you're saying might be true, but I don't think they're going to be able to change philosophy this week against this defense.
This is one of
defense.
The big problems in stat sheets.
Yes.
It doesn't show the last month.
In the game. And you don't realize Drew Brees is over there. And if I go three and out and give them a short field, and I can't back my quarterback up 40 times because they'll get after Big Ben. And what does Big Ben do when he gets a lot of pressure?
Turns it over.
Okay. Now you're getting ready to get boat raced in New Orleans. So you got to be careful when you go into these games because that's the way, man, I've had some great coordinators. And they really sat me down on those Tuesdays when the guys weren't there and explained to me, Chris, this is the way you attack. And there were a lot of times we went against defenses a lot like New Orleans is right now. And he said, you know what we're going to do, Chris? We're going to go in there and run the ball right down their throat because they sitting in their meeting room swearing up and down, I'm getting ready to throw it 45 times, you guys. Now, we're going to run it. And then we're going to play action, and then ultimately I need you guys to take over the game. But our philosophy going in is because they think we're going to do that, we're going to – and that's the New England. That's how New England wins year in, year out by doing the direct opposite.
Right. A lot of times what you look at when you look at a stat sheet is you see that the number one run defense, you see that the number 28th rush defense – or passing defense. And then you get tricked into not looking at the rest of how the games have played out. So much of the time during the beginning of the year, they were so far ahead
that
of teams.
That teams, of course.
The teams don't run the ball. They choose not to run the ball.
They went through like a 10-week period.
Right. And so I'm not saying that they're not good at that, but here's the deal. And I heard you earlier on the program because I was sitting over there listening. You know, I was taking in notes. Mental notes.
Thank you. Sometimes write it down.
Yeah, I should write it down. But here's the deal, and Chris is 100% right. We can throw one over the top, 70-yard touchdown, everybody celebrates. And you know what the defensive players go? Ah, they got us on that one. It's not a big deal. When you constantly just cram it down somebody's throat, 2 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards, 12 yards, 14 yards, man, it's demoralizing to a defense. Demoralizing. And so I just believe if Pittsburgh is going to win in New Orleans with that crowd noise and all the things that they have to do, you damn well better be a balanced football team and take some of the pressure off that passing
game. And stink that passing game, when you're in New Orleans, you're just a fraction off that snap count. So now if I back that quarterback up, that left tackle, that right tackle, now Pittsburgh's got a good offensive line.
But the D-line's getting the jump.
Oh, man. So you have to really bake that into what the stats say compared to how this game is really going to play out.
And New Orleans is one of the loudest places. One of the loudest places in the National Football League. And I will tell you, going to your team, Kansas City, going in there and playing when I was with the Denver Broncos in that environment, we would scrap pile a third of our offense. We would commit to running. These are the runs we're going to run. We're going to commit to it. We know we're not going to have a great yard per carry average, but we have to get attempts. Attempts are important. And then we took out all of our 7-step drops, all of our 5-step drops that had a hitch. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, where you're hitching once and then go. We're throwing all go. We're throwing, you know, Z shallow cross.
Pass rushers were going to get a jump on the offensive line every
100%,
time.
100% of the time.
The one advantage you have
as an offense is snap count. When you go on a place like that, mm-hmm. it takes away that advantage.
And so the other part of this football game that this is one of the more jarring numbers for any playoff team this year is the Steelers are -9. In the turnover differential.
Yeah, it's
every other team that is -8 or more, you're talking about the worst teams in football. You look
at
the Cardinals.
None of them have a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Correct.
Who's touching the ball 65 times on average a game.
And it's not like the team has just been caught with all of a sudden a bad fumble year where all the fumbles, every time the ball goes on the ground, they're not recovering it. These are the vast majority, 75% of these are Big Ben turnovers, either interceptions or fumbles. And so that you talked about the Saints boat racing them. If you lose the turnover battle in New Orleans, you're sunk. Mm-hmm. There's no path to victory. So whether they are going to focus on the run, the pass, or an even distribution, what they have to do is take care of the ball. Not have someone coming around the corner, Cam Jordan strip sacking Big Ben, not Big Ben throwing those red zone picks he loves so much. Like, they to have a chance in this game, they have to take care of the ball. And if they don't win this game, we could be here Monday and they're in eighth place in the AFC. Like, that is, even with the win last week, that's still available to them.
So we've gone through all the things that the Steelers really need to do, the things they need to work on, the things they haven't done well. Mm-hmm. Does this Steelers team still invoke fear in other teams? I know they're having an off year, but when you look on the schedule and you have the Steelers, no matter how they're playing, does a team still look at that as, oh, this is like the Patriots lore, right. This is like the Packers lore, regardless of how they're playing?
Do they have Big Ben?
Yes.
Do they have Antonio Brown?
No. Yes.
Do they have Smith-Schuster?
Yes.
Yeah, you're damn right. They invoke
fear. And typically
they're
going to have 20,000 show up, too, no matter where they're playing.
No matter where they travel. They travel great. I mean, absolutely. This is a team that has so much talent. You can make an argument, at least offensively. They've got a couple of offensive Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. They got guys on the outside that are Pro Bowlers. They got running back that's a Pro Bowler. They got a quarterback. I mean, this is a team that when you look at them talent-wise, you can make an argument they're as talented as any team you have offensively in the whole National Football League. So, of course, they invoke fear.
All right.
You got to stop them.
Okay.
Yes.
Stink.
Good question.
Stick around. Thank you. Coming up next, though, we got three-time heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis.
Oh, man. Oh,
I got some.
Okay. Okay.
Talk about invoking fear. How are you, sir?
How are you?
Welcome back. Twin brothers defend their titles in a huge night of championship fights on Fox. Jermall Charlo taking on Matt Korobov, while Jermall Charlo defends his belt against Tony Harrison. Only a great mom could name their kids such close names. Premier boxing champion Saturday at 8 Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And who better to join us than former heavyweight world champ and Fox Sports boxing analyst Lennox Lewis.
All right.
What's up, sir?
Yes,
good to
sir.
See you, champ.
Welcome to the
Lennox,
show.
Thank you so much for being with us. What should fans expect from a great Saturday night of fighting here in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center?
Yeah, a lot of drama. Boxing always brings the drama. You never know what to expect. You know, like, I went to the fight the other day with the big heavyweights, Deontay and Tyson Fury.
Mm-hmm.
I would never expect what happened.
Man.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. This is what fight fans want to see. They want to see excitement. They want to see something they never expected to see.
The storylines, all of it.
All that.
So. I was reading some stuff, and you were doing a review of that heavyweight fight, and you said if these guys, they fight again, both of them should have learned a great deal from that fight. Will you express to the fans what they should have learned? Because both of them, you had great examples of things during the fight that, man, long term, it helps them to be better boxers and to be able to face each other again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Deontay, he learned that, you know, you got to learn to box. You got to learn that jab is very effective. He learned that not everybody you can knock out, you know. Eventually, there's a guy that's going to be in there, is going to be the same speed as you, same skills as you, and you can't knock him out. So you're going to have to do something different. So what he's learned is you got to box. So he's you know, next fight, he's going to probably be boxing. And what Tyson Fury learned, he learned, like, no, don't bend down. Being a 6'9" guy, don't bend down.
Make yourself shorter.
Shorter and allow a guy to come down on you with all that leverage and knock you out. So each one of these fighters always learns something. So.
And that was, and I want to talk about this event here in a second, but that was, everyone in the arena, including most notably Deontay Wilder, thought the fight was over.
Oh, I thought the fight
was over. And then Tyson Fury did, I mean, to cross sports, The Undertaker all of a sudden. He just sat up from the dead. And it was I thought a draw was great in that because now we're guaranteed to see it again, even if you thought Fury won the fight. But let's talk about this. Jermall Charlo, I know the Charlo twins. I used to briefly go to the same gym where they train at in Houston.
An amazing
story of these two guys, twin brothers. Thankfully, as we were talking about, different weight classes, so they don't have to worry about fighting each other. But both now champions. Jermall Paul's in an odd spot because a late switch. Now he's going to fight Khorabov, who I know is not who he was training for. Tell us about that fight, and then in general, when you all of a sudden have a different guy that you're going to be fighting against for a belt, what that's like.
Well, anytime you change your opponent, you change your mindset. This guy is going to come at you with something different that you didn't prepare for. And it's always difficult fighting those type of guys because, you know, they come out with something that you've never expected or you haven't had time to work on. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting fight. We're going to have to see how well they adapt. One's more aggressive. One leans back and does more boxing. So it'll be an interesting fight. A lot of drama in that fight, too.
What about with the other brother, with Jermell and Tony Harrison? What should fans look for in that one?
Well, that would be a little bit tougher fight because Tony comes and he's aggressive and he comes at you. So we're going to have to see how he deals with that.
All right, so let's talk heavyweights for a second. The opener, you have Dominic Brazil against Carlos Negron. If either of these guys win, do you think they get a title shot?
Maybe, or maybe have another couple fights to kind of warm them up for that. It depends on how they look.
Lennox, in the break, we were talking a little bit more about how you could take where we're fighting, where boxing is right now, and bring it back to where it was, you know, a little bit years ago, where more people can see it, more people were following what you talked about, the drama and the storylines. You had some ideas of where you think fans could see it or how they could take boxing back into the popular time that it was.
Yeah, you know, it should be easy for people to turn on the TV and watch boxing. You know, anybody that loves fighting sports, they should be able to turn on the TV and see boxing and learn about guys that they've never learned about before. What usually happens, a guy gets famous, nobody really knows about him, then all of a sudden he's on Fox, he's on all these different pay-per-view channels, nobody knows him, so they don't even really want to buy into him. What they need to do is grow up with him. Grow up seeing him on the TV. Oh, I like to see this
guy. Yeah, that's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of boxing. I've been to a lot of your fights and everything. And the thing about even yourself, there were great fighters then, but we knew about you coming up in the ranks. Yeah. And in your day, I mean, you're a great athlete. How do we attract some more of the great athletes? Muhammad Ali and some of the other guys, Sugar Ray, Thomas Hearns, great athletes boxing. How do we attract those great athletes back to the sport that you love?
I think it starts with the amateurs. Amateurs, you know, you need that amateur buildup. You need these guys to come into the amateur sports and, you know, learn how to box correctly, learn the biomechanics of the sport. And, you know, this is where they learn from before they turn pro. A lot of them, like, have 10 fights and then they turn pro. I've had an extensive amateur career, 2 Olympics and, you know, over 200 fights as an amateur. Now I'm ready to turn pro. When I turn pro, I'm already gone through 10 fights. You know, these guys are going through 30 fights as professionals. I went through 100 fights as an amateur. So right now I find that the boxers are learning as they get to the top.
And so one of the things you were talking about as far as it being accessible to the general public, that's one of the cool things about these events now being on Fox. Everybody, people that don't have this channel have regular Fox. They have what we call Big Fox. It's going to be on Saturday nights, which is what you're talking about. Guys being able to, without having to necessarily pay a cost for it, turn on a fight, watch it, drink a beer with their buddies, and start to learn who these guys are. I think the Charlo twins are stars. I think people will like the fact that they're brothers, unlike the Klitschko brothers, who are in the same weight class, would never fight each other, and that put a stall on the heavyweight division for a decade. These two guys, you could have two twin brothers who for the next few years are the dominant faces of their weight class as we kind of age out of the Mayweather-Pacquiao era. Yeah. For as I know, you're obviously the heavyweight champ of the world, and for a long time that's the baddest man on the planet.
That's right.
It's really been since your era ended, the most prominent boxers have been these guys' sizes. For people that are now coming back to boxing after your era, tell us a little bit about difference stylistically from the way these guys fight to the way you would fight in your famous matches.
You're talking the heavyweights or just the
like the difference between a middleweight fighter who we're going to see this weekend versus the way you fought.
Well, me, I was, it could all end in one punch. I don't get really paid for overtime, so I'm trying to take you out as soon as possible. You know, I find the smaller weight classes, obviously they don't get paid for overtime either. But they're more boxing, they're more flashy, and there's more of a game plan. I had a game plan as well, and if my game plan failed, I forgot another one. There's, you know, A, B, and C game plan. Sometimes with these guys, they only have one game plan.
Right. Now, what would you do to be able to bring back some of the kind of luster that has been lost with boxing to the heavyweight? If you could make an adjustment, what would you do to boxing now, especially as far as the heavyweights? Because people will always be attracted to that division. And as you mentioned, man, the fastest man in the world and the baddest man in the world, heavyweight champ, and whoever wins the 100 meters, what would you do to be able to bring some of that back?
Make there only be one belt. One belt, you know, when you get all these belts hanging around, champion over here, mm-hmm. champion over here, champion over here, and then, you know, everybody wants to see these guys fight, but yet they don't fight. Now it's getting to a point where, you know, people are getting sick of it. They want to see the good fighters box the good fighters. And, you know, that's what Fox is doing, so I'm happy.
Wait, Lennox, before we leave you, I do have to ask. CeCe says that, and as a professional athlete, there's no athlete in better shape than a boxer at the top of his game, the way he trains, the way he practices, how prepared he is. At your most competitive, just how many hours a day were you training? Just give me an idea. I have to know what he's talking about.
It was like 8 hours a day, you know.
8 hours?
Yeah.
How many miles you running? How many sit-ups you doing?
I never ran miles. I ran in time, so it would be like an hour and a half running, you know.
That's insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, you got to think, if you're playing a 12-round fight, anyone that hasn't ever sparred or boxed or anything, just try to just run in place for 3 minutes. Just run in place for 3 minutes, take a 1 minute. Nobody punching you. Right. You're not punching anybody. Just run in place for 3 minutes.
No, forget that. Try shadow boxing, throwing punches just for a minute.
Just
for a minute.
And with power, too. Yeah. Add the power to it.
All right, I thought you were going to go somewhere else. Before we go, Jenna, when you do the toss, Jenna is actually British.
Oh.
And so she puts on an American accent.
She
does. So if you wouldn't mind, could you, when we leave, can you grade her the way Jenna Wolfe actually talks in British?
Bring the sexy British lady out.
Yes, let a true British lady.
I'm a better trainer than I am. Lennox, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be watching Saturday night on Fox. More First Thing First right after this.
All right.
Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. LSU was taken on Central Florida on New Year's Day in the Fiesta Bowl, and head coach Ed Orgeron isn't just taking his opponent seriously, he's taking his press conferences seriously, too. Take a look and listen.
John Embry, another great young man from Destrehan, Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
Great young man. On a scrimmage, we wanted to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey! Stop the ball! Stop the drill! I'm having a press conference! Thank you!
We had to fix the line of scrimmage. Went all the way to Michigan.
Coach O, man.
He's a football coach. He's no college professor. Okay, no, he's a football coach. Hold the balls.
And you know what I realized watching that? Ed Orgeron, a little bit of a body double for my man Stink.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Skinny little pins and gigantic. Yeah. I'm built like a turkey.
Exactly right. What day's leg day? 0 day. What day's upper chest day? Every day.
Every single day, baby.
A lot of guys around here subscribe to that.
Yeah. So.
Bad at that.
Boom, Brian. All right, Stink, time to talk quarterbacks. Two former MVPs, both battling some tough injuries right now. The Panthers are shutting down Cam Newton with that bad shoulder injury. He's been playing through. Also, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers has a groin injury that he has been fighting through, but he will play this week. Packers will be here in New York facing off against the Jets. Here's what Aaron Rodgers had to say about playing this Sunday.
It's a lot about leadership. You know, if I want to, you know, be listened to and followed and looked up to, you know, how could I stand here and say that, you know, these games that don't matter for playoffs, I'm going to cash it in. It's just not the way I lead, and I'm super competitive, and I want to be out there with the guys, and I look forward to being out there.
Stink, we had a very interesting conversation about this yesterday, whether it should be up to the player or the coach, whether it's better for the player or for the betterment of their career. What do you make of what both teams decided to do with their respective quarterbacks?
Well, I think it really comes down to what the medical profession says, and it comes down to, can you further your injury? If you've got a somewhat of a groin pull, I mean, players want to play, and players are going to go out and play. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to the medical staff. If Cam Newton's shoulder is such that we need to have surgery on this thing, and you're doing further damage, you're irritating it more and doing further damage, and you have whatever he has, I don't know, could be a torn labrum, it could be something else. If you're going to do further damage to it and create degenerative changes in that shoulder joint, like, we have too much invested in you to allow you to go out there and play. And there's a big difference between struggling, and he has struggled for the last month with that shoulder, and having, you know, a groin pull. And so there's a huge difference there, and it comes down to each individual. I totally agree with Aaron Rodgers, and I guarantee you Cam Newton would go out and play. He would go out and play, and he would have the same kind of attitude. I'm going to go out there and play. He's done it for the last month, last 6 weeks, or whatever it is. So, you know, it comes down to, are you going to do further damage? You are invested. And think about this now. Every rule that has been made in the National Football League here in recent years has been made to protect the quarterback, to protect that investment, and also to create offense. And if you're looking at yourself as our franchise quarterback is going to struggle and maybe need surgery or need something done to his shoulder, you know, the investment that we have in him, we're just not going to let him play. I totally understand it.
Well, and yesterday, CeCe, you said, or you asked almost rhetorically, is Cam Newton more important than the right guard? And for the organization, the answer actually has to be yes. For the organization, they have to look at Cam and any potential to further an injury as, wait, the juice is not worth the squeeze here. Like, and so for Cam did the right thing. He, by all accounts, fought to play. That he said, I want to play. I want to be out there. But the organization, I believe, did the right thing in saying, we are not making the playoffs. And by the way, even if it's as bad as it looked on this past Monday night, even if they were alive for the playoffs, the argument might be you need to shut him down. We have seen quarterbacks. I think one of the reasons Andrew Luck missed a full year is because he was trying to play through something instead of dealing with it and addressing it when he needed to. The Rodgers thing to me is a totally separate discussion. He and by the way, Aaron Rodgers, who I think is as good as any quarterback I've ever seen, he's being a little unfair when he says, I wouldn't shut it down with nothing to play for. Like, last year, he came back from a collarbone injury. They lost that game. They got eliminated from the playoffs. And then the team shut him down because they didn't want him to do further damage. A similar situation to Cam. So I understand why Rodgers isn't getting shut down. He has a groin pull, like you were saying. Cam is a thrower of the football, and he could do more damage to his arm throwing the football. So while I know he wants to play, the organization, it's their job to say, it's not your choice, Cam Newton.
It is the organization's job in the long term to look out for their products, the people they're putting money in. But the organization has also told Cam Newton, you're the face of this franchise, you're the leader of this franchise. And this is something only being in the locker room you're going to understand. If you take me off the field, you take away my ability to lead. Because there's two ways that guys lead. They either talk or what they do. And I used to tell guys, because guys get tired of guys who are chirping all the time. Guys who just run their mouth all the time. It's hard to follow guys like that. So what I used to tell guys is, regardless of what I say, I want you to watch me and watch how I come to work. Watch how we lose games. Watch how I do the interviews. Watch how I train the next day. Watch how I watch film. Watch how long I stay. Watch how many jugs I catch. Watch how many heels I run. Watch how many sprints that I run. Watch how many times that I'm not late to work. You lose your ability when you're off the field to lead guys in the locker room. I understand what the organization is doing, but Cam's got a job to do. And if Cam had told them, no, I'm more important, no, I don't need to be in there, would you send a message the wrong way and you lose the ability to lead guys long term? So I understand what the organization has done. I understand that. But that star player, that franchise player, he's got a job to do, and that's to always to lead. And when guys can't hear you, guys can see you. And you never want to be able to lose that ability, because guys see through it. With coaches, organization, the players in the locker room, they see through that phoniness. And I believe in Green Bay, there's a lot of phoniness there. The players see through it. The coach has gotten fired. That's the only reason why Aaron Rodgers is out there, because last year he was in the same situation, and he was like, no, these games aren't important, and I am more important than those other players. But the other players, their careers are just as important. They should be to you.
Sure.
They're that important to me. That's the reason why I play in the preseason. I asked the offensive coordinator, what do you need from me this week? He said, Chris, we don't need that much. How long's the offensive line playing? How long's Randall McDaniel playing? And I always use him as an example because he's one of the greatest players I ever played with. And I used to say, I'm not going to be in there as long as the quarterback. I'm going to be in there as long as Johnny Randall is in there, as long as Randall McDaniel's in there, because I'm trying to be with those guys. And I don't want them to feel like that I'm bigger than them. I'm better than them. And that's what you get into in these situations in NFL locker rooms.
Right. The leadership aspect is really important. And people do, you know, they do look at you. You know who the players are. You know who the guys that are real are. And you look at those guys. And I will say this, man, I spent a lot of time injured. I rarely missed.
Yes.
But I spent a lot of time injured. But when I was injured, when I had back surgery and had to miss a few weeks, when I had, you know, a knee surgery mm-hmm. that I had to miss a few weeks with, you do become somewhat of a pariah, if you will. You're not part of it.
No.
We used to always say in our room, you're dead. Like, yep. That guy's dead.
Yep.
Like, he can't help us anymore. He's dead.
He's and, not and a it's, part of the main
and
flow
I tell you
of the
what,
team.
It makes you feel, as a player, you're beside yourself not being able to be out there.
Which is why we talk so much coming into the season about how Carson Wentz, no matter what he did last year, he wasn't there at the very end to really help him, and he wanted to come back and prove that he could. It was the same thing. He didn't feel like he was part of the team either.
Yes. I also think, and Stink, you and I talked about this, not behind Chris's back. Chris was sitting right there, but off the air, when the Le'Veon Bell situation was going on, mm-hmm. and Chris was, I kept saying for Le'Veon, he can get hurt. And Chris talked about his philosophy was, man, I never worried about injuries.
You can blow your Achilles working out.
Right. That was, and do you remember you walked out here and you were laughing and you were saying, man, Chris, God blessed you in so many to never think about injuries. You, part of what made you see was you broke your collarbone early on. And best I can tell, no, you didn't miss time ever again until you were playing with the Dolphins and they slashed your kidneys or your whatever organ it was. Mm-hmm. And so you went a dozen years playing the style you played, and for whatever reason, we're just dancing through the raindrops, training right. You said God blessed you, whatever it was. That has given you a very, I think, unique perspective on what it is means to be injured, what it does mean to miss time. But your story is an exception more than now. Stinks is an exception almost in the other direction, right. 29 surgeries. But does that make any sense? Like the way you look
it
at missing
sense
time due to injuries.
You, but from me, I have all these other experiences. I got just as much respect for Stink's career. I had guys that were hurt off to Robert Smith. I love Robert Smith. Mm-hmm. Man, Robert Smith, if he get in a car crash, Robert Smith's going to the hospital. That's just the way this business is. It's no disrespect to guy if he's there. Man, you do it what you can. Yeah, that's my experience, but I got a world of experience with other guys. So I do have empathy. I have tremendous understanding. But at the beginning and end of the day, the best ability you got is your availability. Don't tell me how good you are. Can you play today? All right, because that's what's important. And the more you practice, the better you're going to get. The more games you play in, the better you're going to get. So, yeah, I got great experience because I didn't get hurt. Part of that's my training. At the beginning, end of the day, God bless me. He made me very, very unique. He made me an unbelievable athlete, but also coupled with focus, and I want to be out there with my teammates.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. And then, you know, Chris acts like he's never been hurt. I guarantee you he's played hurt plenty. Like, yes. We all have to play hurt plenty. The issue is, like, for Cam, we'll shut you down if you're playing hurt and you're not playing well hurt.
Yes.
Right. Like, now, if yes. Cam was playing well hurt,
it'd be
see,
different.
Here's the,
he was
here's
hurt
the deal.
His team
I played
Monday
my
night.
Whole career. I never played a game where I wasn't hurt.
Right.
You know, I started 100 and probably, you know, close to, with preseason and postseason, I started probably close to 200 games. There's never a game I wasn't hurt that I played. But guess what? I went out and I played well, hurt. And that's what you have to do.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.